Plot Twist. I forgot. I'm Davin.
I'm Laura.
And we're here to talk about some what turned out to be disturbing short stories that we read in Never Whistle at Night, which is edited by Shane Hawk and Theodore C. Van Alst Jr.
Truly one of the most haunting stories I've ever read. And going into this, I was like, we'll pick a few that, you know, we really like. I had trouble picking because they were all, every story in this collection is good, except for one, which I didn't read.
Yeah, I know. I had it, so full disclosure, I haven't read all the stories yet because I thought, oh, I own it, the physical copy, I'll just read with eyes. And that did not happen. So I listened to, I still made a good headway. I think I listened to the first five or six. So I still made, I read a decent amount, but I think I was surprised that it's more the social real life aspects that were really dominant. It wasn't the other stuff, the spiritual, the supernatural stuff, it's definitely there. But I think what affected me the most was the more social aspects of the stories and what the characters are dealing with than the traditional horror trope elements.
Right. I feel like the most haunting ones that I will be thinking about forever anytime I see a baby.
No. Rebecca Roanhorse. That is the first thing of hers I've ever read. And I
wasn't,
think I,
isn't that Nick Medina's? Rebecca Roanhorse is
babies in a way, but you're right. Yes. I think babies. What you're talking
you're
about.
Right.
Nick Medina's. I was excited for his though too because I read Our Sisters of the Lost Nation. I think was his initial release, which was good. And I want to read Whistle by him, so I was excited. But that one was very traumatizing. I was like, poor Sammy, please just pay attention.
Can somebody hold that baby, please?
Yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, he's mad. And I was like, oh my god, I just want to give him a hug. You know? Oh my goodness.
So sad.
It was really sad. So obviously you read more than I did. So what are some, if you were going to recommend this to someone, what are a few that you would recommend someone start with?
So I'm going to first say shout out to Erica Robin, and the website is ericarobinreads.com, because her website is what I'm using to look at the stories, because I don't have a physical copy.
Oh, smart.
And,
okay.
You know, she has the name of the story, the author, and then a brief breakdown, and then her thoughts.
Oh, beautiful.
So I'm finding that very helpful to remember what it is that, because I listen to it, obviously, so it's broken up between getting in and out of my car, you know, whatever. So my brain can't always put the story title and the author together. So I do think White Hills by Rebecca Roanhorse is one of the ones that I would recommend that's going to stick with me forever. Navajos Don't Wear Elk Teeth by Conley Lyons.
That was rough.
Nightmares. There are more. It's hard because it's all of them.
I'll answer, just read every single one, which honestly I would recommend so far. These are all really good. I would definitely, it's a great collection so far.
Snakes Are Born in the Dark by D.H. Trujillo was another one where I was like, can we please just listen? Can you just listen to what you're being told?
No, of course not. Why would we? We know better.
But I think my favorite from this collection is Behind Colin's Eyes by Shane Hawk.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was a really eerie tale, like a true campfire story, it felt like.
Oh, yeah. See, that's what I felt about the first one I started with, because at first I was like, I'm just going to pick one based off of the title. I think it's the Human Eaters one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Human Eaters by Royce K. Youngwolf. That one also kind of has that camp, because they are around a fire. They're cooking dinner with their grandma or an elder. I think it's their actual blood grandma, but it does have that camp camp feel to it.
Always put a little bit of food out behind you if you're eating outside to distract the human eaters.
No shot. Okay, but can we talk about, because White Hills by Rebecca Roanhorse, I will never be the same after reading that short story. That was so sad and depressing.
It's so dark.
Yeah, and it's that 100% conversations like that are happening. And it's terrifying about what we don't know that's probably happened as a result of these, you know, vomit
I just, like, the thing is, I want to say I can't imagine it, but I can, because we live in such an awful world.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that short story, it follows a young woman. I don't remember. Marissa? Wasn't her name just Marissa?
Maybe, yeah.
It starts with an M, but she's a young woman. She is half Indian, but she looks white, so she's white presenting. And she marries this really wealthy guy, and you kind of get a little backstory that she grew up poor and just, you know, hand-me-downs and not exactly where she wanted to be. So now she's an influencer with this shiny life and this great husband, and oh, she's pregnant. So she is going to tell him eventually, but he's up for a partner or some big thing, and he needs to show that he will not be bothered by having a family, because God forbid. So now that all falls under her. And then she makes a passaway comment that she's half Native American, and her very ultra-white rich family does not like that. And it goes to some very dark places, so trigger warnings if you have some, you know, it's not good.
It's not especially good.
Around, like, loss of a baby and things like that. So definitely read this when you are okay to. But I specifically want to talk about the ending, because it does kind of end ambiguously, which a lot of these stories do, and I appreciate that, especially with Stephen Graham Jones's foreword, where he is like, this is just... these are how these stories are going to end. Do you think she did it? Do you think she cut off her finger? Or do you think she did something else?
Nope. I think she cut off her finger so she could have her glamorous life for as long as she could. Because the mother-in-law was basically like, cut off your finger. I'll let this ride out until my son's sick of you. And then we can talk about a divorce settlement. And she was like, all right.
Yeah, because the whole thing, she was like, all right, well, people always say, like, you know, they're 1/16th native, but, like, what part of you? Is it your left side? Is it your right side? So I'm just going to say it's your pinky finger.
Oh, God.
And you're just going to cut it. And it's like, what? I definitely think so, but I think she did it, but I hope that she also found a way to, like, get back at them. Like, I hope there's, like, a part two revenge and she's just, like, doing some crazy and then we'll somehow get all of their fortune and not have to deal with it anymore. Like, yeah. There needs to be a good revenge tale.
Bring this full circle, like a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah, like, I would love this to be a novella. It doesn't even have to be a full novel. Just give me a novella, but I don't know. I hope that she goes the revenge route and isn't just, like, you know, tinkering along until the divorce happens. Which is honestly, you know, the more likely scenario, but I choose to think revenge, so... that's where
I would plot revenge. I don't know that Marissa has it in her, though, because she just kind of, like, went along with all of it.
Yeah, but I also think, too, like, you know, that was, like, right after her miscarriage. And so, like...
it wasn't,
you know,
a miscarriage.
Okay, well, yeah, the forced... ugh, whatever.
Nightmare.
Yeah. But after that, then she wakes up, she's like, I'm going to be prepared. And she's like... cooking breakfast and, like, dressed super nice. So I think I could see her maybe taking that whole situation and those new feelings and her husband's, the fact that he knew what his mom was going to do to her.
Knew exactly what was going to happen and, like, knew this wasn't over and just let it happen anyway.
Exactly. So I think she could harness all of that into something. Because I think, too, it's more, and again, like, you only get so little time with the characters and we only have such a portion of their backstory and a little glimpse into their future, but I'm wondering how she would feel. Like, I think it's more the money for her of that security. Like, it's not the fact that, oh, I love him, I don't want to lose him. It's, no, I don't want to lose his comfort.
Yeah.
So she could kind of do whatever she wants as long as she gets that security, you know?
I agree.
Yeah, that one truly, truly disturbing. Your turn.
Do we want to talk about Navajos Don't Wear Elk Teeth by Conley Lyons?
Yes, let's talk about that one.
So I'm not going to remember any names from these stories. I'm just not. I'm really sorry. But we follow a main character who is queer, and he has a beach house that's been kind of handed down in his family. And he's staying at this beach house for the summer when he meets white, thin, attractive man in the street one day, and they, like, immediately start up a relationship, and it gets really serious really fast in, like, a super creepy way. And as this relationship develops, our main character finds out that this man has, like, a box of teeth that he mm-hmm. carries around with him. And he's like, oh, this is an elk tooth. This is a, I don't know, bear tooth, whatever. And I don't know. Would you have bought that? Because I feel like I would immediately be like, those are people teeth. I see people teeth in there.
Yeah, 100%. Immediately, he was like, oh, yeah. Cause I think one of the lines was the first one he showed him. He was like, oh, my last guy gave this to me. And it's like, did you take it? Or were you giving it? Because
seems to me suspicious. Like, you took that tooth, you freak.
Yeah. No, that was my immediate thought. I was like, these are not animal teeth. I think because of the person that I am, I would be like, no. Especially with how it started, because he comes on really creepily. Like, I think, isn't the main character, he's putting back his pride flag up because someone tore it down, or he's in his yard yeah. doing stuff, and the character just comes over in, like, his swim trunks or something, yeah. and, like, there's water involved, and it's just really weird. And it's like, okay, you're kind of coming on creepy, and then you have a box of teeth, serial killer, pass.
And
call the
like,
cops.
So there's the initial interaction, which is, like, extremely sexual, and then gets mm-hmm. more sexual in kind of a violent way. And then the next day he breaks into the main character's house and we yeah. no red flags.
Uh-huh. He was well, like, main, oh, okay.
Well, he's even like, I realize this is a red flag, but I guess I just don't care because I don't want to spend the summer alone.
Yeah. So it's also like, what concessions are you willing to make if you do want that company too? Because who knows where he's coming from as well. Like, you know,
I don't know his life.
Happened in your life. Exactly. So
I don't know his
maybe
life.
That's why he's turning a blind eye to the very
obvious. But once
obvious.
Again, honey, no.
I know. I just wanted to be like, sweet baby child. He is a walking red flag and he will probably try to murder you and take out your teeth to pass off to his next boyfriend.
To put in his little tooth box.
Yeah. Mm-mm. No, thanks. And the whole part too, where because I think they're making food together, and he talks about how our main character has like this crock that was passed down in his family, so it's very sentimental. You know, there's some decor on it or some kind of artwork on it, and the partner is like, this is the ugliest thing I've ever seen. Uh-huh. And it's like, you carry a box of teeth around with you? And he's like joking around of like, I'm gonna drop it. And I'd be like, no, absolutely not. Get out of my house.
Get
please.
Out. I love the friend that's like, those are human teeth. Get the out of the house.
Yes.
The human I teeth. Loved, human. I love and it's like, ducking human
yes.
teeth. Duck.
I love the autocorrect because, like, you know that, like, he's, like, furiously texting his best friend to get out of there. So there's no time to correct that text message. And it's uh-huh. just that. And I was like, uh-huh, that would be me. That yeah. would just 1,000% be me.
But again, like, super haunting. Mm-hmm. Men are red flags, all of them. Check their houses for teeth.
That's what makes, like, dating so scary. It's like, you want me to spend hours with this person, and I don't know them. And even you could spend years with that person and not know.
And then find their crazy teeth collection.
And then find that, or that news story where there was someone, a couple locked in their basement, and they were, you didn't hear about that story?
No.
Oh my God, it was like total side note, and I've only read the headlines. It was this woman, she is or was married to a pastor or just someone high up in the church of some religion, who cares, they're all the same, and he was keeping a couple in their basement, and she didn't know, apparently. So, that's fun. Be careful who you spend your time with, guys, because it is nightmare fuel out there. Speaking of horrifying, the other story that we talked about that was never gonna leave my mind and just made me very sad was Quantum by Nick Medina.
Yeah.
That one was very sad. It follows a young woman. I'm assuming she's younger. Maybe she's not, but a woman, and she has two children. One, you find out that he is, his dad was white, so he is only, they gave you the results. You know, she ends up doing a test because she wants to get them on the tribal roll, and her first son doesn't have enough native blood to be on the roll, so he doesn't get that extra income and all the advantages that kind of comes with that on the reservation. But her younger son with her new partner does, because I think he's like full native or like just like
yeah,
a little
it was,
bit more.
Yeah,
like
it
a
was
percentage.
Right. It wasn't even that much more from what I remember. Like, one was like 3/16 and one was something else, you know, but it was, they weren't that far off.
Yeah, but because of that, like, the younger one is going to get more advantages, and slowly throughout the story, you just see how she neglects her first son because of it. Like, she is just like, oh, he's, maybe it was a mistake to have him, and her partner calls, you know, him a mistake as well, and so you have all these encounters of, like, oh, he is, like, reaching for his mom, but, you know, the younger son makes a little whimpering noise, and so she goes to him and ignores him, and he's getting new moccasins, and he's getting, you know, all these clothes, and a haircut, his first haircut, and the first son is, you know, disheveled and matted and not cared for at all.
Crawling on all fours on the floor.
Yes, he is, you know, not having a great time whatsoever. But
they're still taking this baby, because they're both babies, out, yes, and, like, everybody else is seeing this other child, and just, like, oh, is he okay? Like, his hair is matted. Like, at least he seems well-behaved. Like, just...
Yeah, oh, he's fine. Or the part where they're, because they're going to a funeral because the tribal chief, right? Or the, tribal chief dies. It was an elder. He's
definitely an elder. Something John.
Yeah, Big John. And she is just, you find out, like, she's very obsessed with native blood and it being, like, the most important thing. And she's like, oh my gosh, like, he was more Native American than all of us, and all that blood's gonna go to waste. And so she is, like, walking up to this funeral with these thoughts. You know, early she steals a syringe from a friend, and there's that scene where she is having someone look after Sammy, her oldest son, because she's like, I can't take him in there. But she takes her youngest son in there, and just asks someone to watch him, and the woman is like, okay. And she tries to get blood out of the corpse. And then the priest walks up and is like, can you stop that? What are you?
Yeah, he's been embalmed. So
that's what I was thinking too. I was like, I doubt there's blood left in him, but maybe that's not as, I don't know, like death rituals. But, and she's like, I just wanted his blood. What do you do with his blood? And he's just like, we throw it away. It's a biohazard, ma'am. Like, we don't. No, we don't keep that, because you kind of get the impression she was probably going to try to inject her son with that blood, which was going to probably kill him or do something. He would be very sick. I don't know what would happen, but it does not sound like it would be a very good thing.
Yeah.
And then at the end, the ending is interesting because they're, like, in bed. I think it's right after the funeral, and there's, like, scratching and whimpering at the door, and she's asking her partner, like, oh, did you leave the dog outside? And then she's like, do we have a dog? And she goes out.
He says, we have something.
That's right. You're right. Because he is so just, like, not interested in this child at all. And she opens the door and it's her son on all fours. And he's, like, really shaggy looking. And you kind of get the impression that, like, I don't know, it cut, like, not a werewolf exactly, but just, like, you know, hairy and very disheveled. And so she puts him in his crib and then moves, because they have the whole dialogue at the beginning of, oh, should we get Sammy a dream catcher too? And the partner is like, well, will it even do anything for him? So they don't. And then at the end she moves it over, because the last line was like,
yeah, I can't remember who says something to her, but someone is like, oh, well, you know, the blood is what we make it or something. It's what we believe it is.
Yeah,
it was
the priest. Yeah, so the priest says, because she has that line at the end, like, after the priest catches her, she says, Big John was more Indian than the rest of us. And then the priest says, I suppose it was the blood that made him that way. And then the last line was, knowing now that something could grow into anything, she took the dream catcher from over Gray's crib and hung it over Sammy's head. And it's like, well, aren't we a little late for that? Like, or do you love him now? Like, where are we at? What's going on?
My hope is that she's chosen to believe it. The quantum doesn't matter. And now she's going to raise her child.
I know that one.
So upsetting.
It was, it was really, really sad.
Did you read Behind Colin's Eyes?
No, I didn't. But if you want to ask questions about it, am totally fine. Or, so I read Wingless, Hunger, TikTok, and Kushtuka.
Kushtuka.
Kushtuka, there you go.
I know how to say that because I listened to it. That one was interesting.
Yeah, that one was weird.
But I like the idea of having, like, a doppelganger of sorts, like, enact your revenge for you.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Okay, let's talk about Scariest Story Ever for a second. We can't really go into it, but I just want to talk about a cool thing that they did.
Okay.
With this story collection. We kind of talked about it yesterday. So I did the audio, and you were initially reading with your eyeballs. Yeah. And Scariest Story Ever by Richard Van Camp, I went to go start listening to it. And in the audio version, before each story, they say the story title, and then they announce the author. But This one had an author's note that was like, don't listen, please don't press play unless there's snow on the ground, because then they'll know we're talking about them.
Which is terrifying because it never snows here, so that means I could never listen to that story if I were to follow that.
Yeah,
so I have to tempt fate and do it or drive up north, but I don't know how to drive in the snow.
You can read it with your eyes. You just can't listen to it or talk about it if there's no snow on the ground.
Okay.
So we're not going to talk about the details of the story, but I just thought that was like such a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I love that they did something different and were like, hey, FYI, if you are listening to this audiobook,
that is a fun little thing to add in. Maybe when you visit, you can read it. You can borrow my copy.
Yeah. Thanks for keeping us safe.
Yeah. Thanks for looking out for us, Richard Van Camp. Do you think that since reading this one, will you be listening to the second collection when it comes out?
I absolutely would. This was such a well curated and like well done selection of stories that I can't imagine the second one wouldn't be just as good. And this, it like ran the gambit of all types of horror. There's body horror stories in here. There's a story about a tick that I was just like,
yes, I read that one this morning and I was like, actually get me out of here. I would like to not listen to this ever again. Thank you so much.
And she never went outside again.
Yeah, exactly. No, thank you.
The Snakes Are Born in the Dark also has body horror that I just really struggled with. So there's that. There's some supernatural horror. There's some psychological horror. And then kind of like true crime thriller horror-esque. Like it had so many great stories and also like, you know, blending that with kind of cultural and social aspects that are real and horrifying.
Yeah. I'm excited, too, because looking at the lineup, it looks like they have a lot of new authors joining this one. Of course, like, you have Shane Hawk and Theodore C. Van Alst Jr. doing stories. And even though Stephen Graham Jones did the foreword, it looks like he actually has a story in this new one. But okay. I think, from initial glance at the first one, I think these are all new authors that weren't in the first one, which is pretty cool.
It is cool. Because like we were talking about last week, there were some authors on here, and I can't pick them out because I'm stupid. My brain doesn't work that way. But who had never been published before. And I want to say one of those was Collections by Amber Blazer Wardzala. Maybe I made that up.
One was, because I just finished it earlier today, it was Hunger by Phoenix Boudreau. This was their first time being published, based on the description, the little author talk.
Mm-hmm.
And that story was really good.
Oh, that story was great.
That was a really fun one. I did like that one, especially like when she confronts, when the spirit is getting closer to her, and it's like, oh, she doesn't remember because the other people killed their stories and their culture. She's not going to know what to do. And she just turns around and is like, hey, hungry spirit, like, what's up? And she's like fully ready to exercise it out of this white boy who did not deserve her help at all.
I love that her and her friend are just like, yeah, Reservoir Dogs is up for a second season while they're like killing.
Oh my God, I know. She was like, ugh, I just can't.
They Reservoir. Such an awkward... I'm such an idiot.
No, okay. I thought at first Reservoir Dogs, because that was the first thing. I think it's Reservation Dogs, actually.
It is. But Reservoir Dogs is a really old movie, and I...
Yes.
My stupid brain.
It was, yeah, I think it's Reservation Dogs when they have that whole thing. Like, I just can't, like, how they left it was so awkward. And she was like, trust, it'll be okay. Like, they won't be awkward anymore. They'll be fine.
Yeah.
It was cute.
That's exciting, because I do think they did a good job. And I know, like, I was listening to the afterword or whatever it's called, and they were talking about, like, they just asked people to submit, like, asked Native and Indigenous authors to submit stories, and they just kind of read through them. So I'm sure they have enough. I would love to see new authors. That's exciting.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, if that's how they did it, that would be really cool to read more. I'm assuming they probably have enough to do even more stories, more collections. The cover is really cool too. It looks like it's more bloody.
Yeah, they used different artwork. It's a similar like motif, but it's definitely bloodier. I love the description is they're back.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Embracing both supernatural horrors and the everyday horror of living under colonialist rule. I can't find a list of authors to save my soul.
Here, I have it. So we have Jessica Doe, P.C. Verone, Theodore C. Van Else Jr., Jim Terry, Jessica Johns, A.J. Eversole, Sonia Marie Barry, Shane Hawk, Stephen Graham Jones, Alicia Elliott, Matt Rudwalker, Shawan Francis Kiana, Billy Ray Belcourt, Jake Arrowtop, Alina Pete, Deborah Magpie Erling, Joshua Whitehead, Tommy Orange, which that name sounds so familiar.
Because Tommy Orange, it got very famous. What was that book called? I will find it.
And there's also Ramona Emerson, Erica Tremblay, and Kimberly Blazer.
Tommy Orange wrote There, There, and Wandering Stars, and both are like national bestsellers, huge books.
Okay. I was like, I know I've heard that name before. Oh, the cover of There, There makes sense. Okay. I remember seeing that one everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited for that one. That one comes out in August. That's August 18th this year. So we have another anthology to look forward to. Plus all the ones that we talked about last week.
Right. Our new thing, anthologies.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. I want it to be, but it might take forever for me to actually plow through those. What was that face for?
I was just reading through Erica Robbins' description of all of the stories. Did you read The Prepper?
No, I didn't.
By Morgan Talty. That was another good one. But it's so sad. Again.
They're all so sad.
They're all incredibly sad. But.
No, I'm going to definitely continue reading them because I do like them a lot. And there are quite a few. I think Stephen Graham Jones is in like the beginning. So there's like 20. There's over 20 of these stories in there. There's a lot.
The first collection?
Yeah, in the first one.
That makes sense.
Well, that was Never Whistle at Night. Hopefully you guys pick it up and join us on the very sad but satisfying, maybe interesting, I don't know the other adjective here, ride that this collection takes you on, because it is definitely, it's creepy.
Yeah. I'm not going to say it was like a good times read, but...
Oh, absolutely not. It was not a good times read. You have to definitely be in like a good mental spot where you can handle some dark stuff. If you're not, then you want to wait until you are, because it'll bring you down a little bit, which is, I think it's supposed to in a way.
Well, absolutely.
With the stories that they're telling, so.
Yeah. But it's like incredibly well done. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Same. Good pick. This is another Laura one.
We did it.
Brainchild. We did it. And tune back in 2 weeks, and we will be back with another collection of stories for you in some capacity that you should probably read and add to your never-ending TBR like ours. So,
yeah, I don't know what we're doing, but we'll figure it out.
We always do. And in the meantime, you can follow us at Plot Twist I Forgot on Instagram, and then you can check our show notes for our handles and probably that Erica blog breakdown you were talking about.
Erica Robbins, thank you so much, Erica.
Yes, you helped us tremendously, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Bye!